The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
How this really did divide the country in racial ways, kind of what the meaning of this was from that perspective. But it was so racially charged because of what had happened just before with Rodney King, but also just how Black Americans feel about policing. But he represented something for the Black community in that moment, in that trial, particularly because there were two white people who had been killed, and the history around how Black people have been persecuted during slavery. There were just so many layers. There was racial tension then. There is racial tension now. It might not be the backdrop of the Trump campaign, but until this country is ready to actually have an honest conversation about the racial dynamics from our origin story till today, we will always have moments like O.J. Simpson that manifest, and our country will always be divided if we don't actually deal with the issue of race.
It is true that it was tragic, evil, and an unforgivable assault upon two human beings who lost their lives. But to say that was the greatest tragedy in light of the accumulated indignities, murders, denials of opportunity, failure to give just due to African American people in the court system, that, my friend, is a weighted tragedy that we cannot merely dismiss. So it's not either or. What happened to those two people was a heinous crime. What has continued to happen to African American people before that crime and after that crime are testimony to the deeply entrenched systemic inequities that continue to flagrantly deny opportunity for African American people, and we've lost so many lives as a result of that, and we've got to weigh those on the scale. They are both, I'm not trying to say one is worse than the other, but to suggest somehow that those accumulated indignities are not themselves the story of this would be equally problematic as well. This is what happened to white America. You got just a small taste of what African American people have had to deal with daily.
And it's also worth noting, because of that unrest, that racial unrest in the 90s, that is why so many people who may not have been invested in O.J. Simpson were just happy to see that someone who was rich and famous and Black could get away with what other people did in the system as well, too.
They're always ready to fan the flames of hatred. Racial, in this case, it didn't even take a crisis, did it? Or a manufactured narrative. O.J. Simpson died yesterday. And so here they are. I mean, the first lady, the CNN contributor, she's basically saying that the Black community has a special connection with O.J. because the victims in that horrible crime were white. So you get a little bit of a taste of what we've been going through before O.J., after O.J. It's unbelievable. And you know, if you've read the Trumpet magazine, you know where this is leading. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on this final show of the week. You can get to the live video stream of this program every weekday morning at 11:05 a.m. in the Central Time Zone of the United States. Just go to trumpetdaily.com or the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. You really see, I mean, this, there's so many different angles to this story. There, as one of them said, there are lots of layers. What does it say about the criminal justice system? Just thinking back to the spectacle, the circus that it was in 1995, as the judges and the attorneys, they were not just in court. I mean, in my case, that was like one of the first opportunities I had to actually peer into a courtroom. And it was just, it was like it was a TV movie. Like it was fiction. Is this really happening? Is this really going to happen and no one's going to be held to account for a double homicide? I mean, the prosecution could have done a better job. And the defense attorneys, the Hollywood lawyers, I mean, they came in and they used the race card nonstop. They made the law enforcement officials out to be racist just for investigating the case. And then he was let go. He went to prison later, OJ, on some other charges. And of course, he was held liable in that civil case. But what a mess. And then look at today. Look at how much, you know, public opinion or the regime media. Look at how much they influence the court cases that go on. Look at how effective they are in using lawfare and creating crimes, fake crimes. And then people that commit actual crimes, they run scot-free. This is from NPR, doing its part, of course, to fan the flames of hate. All, what, 87 of their Democrats and zero Republicans? Here's what they came up with. It says, when the mixed-race jury announced the not guilty verdict, public reaction seen in media coverage largely fell along racial lines, showing black people celebrating and white people shocked by the acquittal. How could this be? It says here, the trial took place 3 years after the acquittal of four LAPD officers in the beating of Rodney King, and that it had inflamed the deep distrust among black people and police. Distrust because, largely because of a corrupt media. This is the regime media back in the day, back even before the Dear Leader came along. It says, but as a wealthy celebrity who married a white woman, Simpson was never seen as a staunch proponent of the African-American community, says Darnell Hunt, a professor of sociology, and as a result, didn't engender overwhelming sympathy among African-Americans during his trial. But there were celebrations. Yes, yes, there were celebrations of a man being set free, a man that most people agree committed murder. And he literally got away with murder. You go back to some of the articles, as I say, you know where this is leading because you're reading The Trumpet. Tomorrow's News Today, following the Rodney King riots, that was in 1992, I believe. My father wrote this in the June 1992 Trumpet. This takes us back 30-some years, 32 years. It says, as the economy grows worse, the rioters are going to burn more and more because God's wrath is upon us. God's wrath is upon us. He says, and this rioting is going to spread to other Israelite nations unless these people repent. God is going to get our attention one way or another. He's trying to get our attention. Look at how much hatred. I mean, O.J. Simpson dies. He was 76. And they rush to the cameras to tell you about, well, we just need to have the conversation. We still haven't got, we had 8 years of the Dear Leader, a black president. And now he's running it from behind the scenes. But somehow we have never had an honest conversation about race. And until we do, well, you're going to continue to have O.J. Simpson stories. Isn't that a wonderfully comforting message coming from the regime, coming from the media? This is from 1995, following the O.J. Simpson verdict. It says, ultimately, the damage from this trial will be far worse than the Rodney King affair. Some have called this trial a circus, meaning a disorganized mess. But the trial has been carefully orchestrated by Satan, and God has allowed it. At a time when crime is out of control, our police departments are being stripped of their power. This was back when the regime, I mean, they hated law enforcement. The law enforcement was always to be blamed. As we now know, that one exception to that rule is January 6th, the Capitol Hill Police. Satan is destroying the government of the land so he can explode the social bomb of racial hatred to tear us apart. That is easy to do with virtually no effective police department. It's easy to do. You distrust police or law enforcement. And, well, look at what happens to the nation. It's just breaking down. We see the double standard in the DOJ and the FBI. as they're out there saying, if you don't continue to give us those FISA powers, people are going to die. Chris Wray sounding like he's really concerned about the security of the nation. If as MTG said earlier today, if government authorities were really concerned about the security of the nation, they'd be securing the southern border first and foremost. But it's not being done. It's just the opposite. People are flowing in through land, water, and air from all over the world. This is from the Telegraph. This is, you have to think again, as you see all of these problems in the United States, what are other nations thinking about the world's so-called single greatest superpower? It says here, similar scenes of unrest also feature at the start of a new film, Civil War, which takes the concept of America's political fracturing to its logical extreme. This is the Telegraph writing about America's civil war. It's coming. The title is How America's Next Civil War Could Unfold. I mean, it's just kind of taking it as a matter of fact. It's coming. This isn't the trumpet. This is the Telegraph. The movie's fictional, but with widespread fears that November's presidential election might plunge America back into turmoil, many are already hailing it as a cautionary tale. Some have even questioned the wisdom of Hollywood releasing it in the current climate. Well, here comes Hollywood for its part. They're right there in the regime as well. Right there with NPR. They're all together. It says such jitters aren't uncommon, according to a 2022 poll by YouGov, The Economist. 40% of Americans think a new civil war is at least somewhat likely in the next 10 years. 40%! And it's coming in the next 10 years! Look at the history. Look at how quickly things just spiraled out of control. Back in 1992, 63 people murdered in the Rodney King riots. Look at 1995, the spectacle, the circus. Look at 2020, the summer of love. And what was the regime doing there? They were inciting it. They were encouraging it. They loved the violence. You had members of Congress praising the violent. Because, well, we need to do it to get people's attention. Because we've got to get around to this honest conversation. We just forget about rule of law. Forget about anarchy and mayhem. We have to have an honest conversation. Derangement has set in. Speaking of that, this was from the LA Times, the obituary on O.J. Simpson, talking about when he got out of prison back in 2017. It says, long before the city woke up on a fall morning in 2017, Trump walked out of Lovelock Correctional Center outside Reno, a free man for the first time in 9 years. They've got Trump on some kind of an auto key, no doubt, for all of their articles. Because if you're going to be talking about prison, then Trump must be the subject, right? Wait, this is hilarious. They have got Trump on the brain even when they're writing about O.J. Simpson's death. It's unbelievable. Trump walked out of the Lovelock Correctional Center outside Reno. And then it says he went on to Las Vegas and whatever. As I've said so many times, I mean, Donald Trump is living rent-free in their brains. They've got Trump on the brain. Always. Always. It's real. Trump derangement syndrome. It is a real thing. Listen to this from the Morning Meltdown, clip 8.
Well, I think we're going to hear Donald Trump did this about a lot of issues as the year goes on, including those connected to assaults on the democracy on January 6th, but most powerful.
Well, and also Donald Trump, and we're going to be talking about this too, he's desperately trying to run away from all the times he said he wanted to do away with Obamacare.
Yes.
Now he's saying, oh, no, no, Obamacare. I forget what I said about John McCain going like this. Maybe I like Obamacare.
Yeah,
so he's flip-flopping. He just looks so weak and desperate right now.
Truth. Donald Trump did this. And as much as the Biden administration knows they have to put forward a positive message, so much of what they're going to say between now and November is like, look, this is what Trump did. He has changed your life. He has taken away your freedoms. He's threatening to do more. We can't have this again.
And what about 10-year-old girls that are raped by illegal immigrants who have to flee the state, 13-year-old girls who are forced to have babies because their mothers think, that they have to do it. I mean, it's just, no, it's not. It's the suffering and the punishment that Donald Trump is exacting on women of all ages is really shocking.
That's Morning Joe talking about 10-year-old girls being raped by illegal, at least he admits there's illegal immigrants coming across the border and raping people, raping Americans. So we got to give him some credit for that. But, and by the way, show a little compassion. This is an undocumented rapist, not illegal. He's here legally, the way they view it. But look at the twisted and distorted reasoning to tie in the illegal immigration with raping that goes on. And then you've got to make it so easy for everyone to get an abortion. This is the year about abortion. That's what they're going to be talking about, these radicals. And, you know, there's an intense amount of pressure on the conservative right to compromise, to not go too far with abortion restrictions. Well, like I said the other day, we'll see how much of a concern that is, the Arizona ruling, come November. But right now, you see it. I mean, they're trying to milk it for everything they can get. We love our abortions. We don't want to go to another state to get an abortion. We want to be able to do it in Arizona, in Ohio, in Mississippi, everywhere. They love abortion. You would think, again, when you're thinking about the health of the nation, well, secure the borders. That's an obvious no-brainer, right? But also just encouraging family living, encouraging family building. We kind of need more children. They don't want that. They want illegals to just come pouring into the nation. We need them. We need them. They're there doing jobs, and we've got to have them. We've got to have them as servants. Joe said this morning, they're filling job positions top to bottom across society. Listen to Lawrence O'Donnell. This may be, by the way, this may be the last time we play him, clip two.
Now, we normally don't allow Donald Trump to occupy your full television screen during this program. But for this one time, as you consider yourself sitting there on Monday in the position of a juror looking at him, let's look at what they will actually see without hearing a word from Donald Trump. And for that, we're going to go back to the full screen so you can take in what this man actually looks like now. Donald Trump is likely to be sitting there, as he is in this recent campaign videos. That's a picture of him when he's trying to look his absolute best in his campaign video, which in his mind includes a face partially covered in some form of homemade bronzer, in which he always forgets the ears. To some eyes, actually makes him look like a horror movie character. The only thing he brings to his defense is that silent, discolored face. A face that lies to you without Donald Trump saying a word. A face that claims to be a color of brown that is betrayed by his 77-year-old pink ears. A face that is topped by hair that is lying to you about exactly where Donald Trump's hairline might actually be. Every day that the jurors spend in that courtroom with defendant Trump, they will be wondering how he can be so deeply oblivious to the truth. The truth of what he looks like with that stuff that he slaps on his face. Some of them will be thinking correctly, he can afford the best professional makeup, but this is what he chooses. They will be wondering about what other truths about himself is Donald Trump unable to admit.
This is what mental illness looks like. Who writes this, by the way? How many writers does this guy have in his show putting together this drivel? I mean, this is Trump derangement syndrome on steroids. Just a mugshot of Donald Trump putting that up there and just making fun of everything about him. It's embarrassing, isn't it? It's artificial intelligence. It's children. Little children. Isaiah 3. Children running the show, in his case, as I say. Maybe that'll be the last time. I just saw the transcript of it earlier, but listening to him, listening to the pauses, he had a lot of Dear Leader pregnant pauses throughout. Listen to, I'm going to skip over one. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Here's the regime out there trying to cause division, stir up hatred, strife, get pit one race against the other. It says here, while most black men said they intend to support Biden, some 30% of them in the poll said they were either definitely or probably going to vote for the former Republican president. How about that, O'Donnell? They're going to vote for the guy that has a fake face and fake hair and fake everything, I guess. It says here, there isn't comparable WSJ, a swing state polling from 2020, but Trump received votes from 12% of black men nationwide. That's from the last election. It says in the Wall Street Journal poll, 11% of black women said they were either definitely or probably going to vote for Trump in 2020. The AP poll found 6%. So he's getting more and more from the minority community. He's getting more and more from blacks and Hispanics. Donald Trump, that's right. The guy was just described there so eloquently by Larry O'Donnell. We've made the point all week about whether the billionaires or their conservatives or never Trumpers, even politicians, they're coming around to support or to get on the Trump train. I mentioned this Hollywood actor, how that he was like Lawrence O'Donnell for a long time, just spewing out things like what you just heard, diatribes like that, only with a lot of profanity. Listen to this Hollywood actor as he's now saying, Trump's on the table for me. I mean, I may vote for Donald Trump, clip 7.
Voting for Trump is on the table. People are like, what are you talking about? That's my reality. I will not vote for Joe Biden. I do not support anybody from the squad. I think they're totally full of it. I think they're dangerous. I think they're race hustlers. I think they're cons.
People are waking up to the fact that they're cons, that we've been conned, that we've been lied to. That they're in it just for themselves. They're there to serve themselves. Listen to Roseanne Barr as she joked last night about the 81 million votes that Joe Biden supposedly got in 2020. Clip 6.
The biggest winner in America's history. 81 million votes. You know what I mean? It's almost unbelievable. Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable, and everyone dies laughing. Everyone knows Everyone knows it was rigged. Everyone knows we've been conned. Everyone laughs at the thought of Joe Biden pulling in 81 million votes. They'll try to give him 90 million this time around. If they could, they would. And they would say it's the most secure election in history. Unless, of course, Trump got 91 million. Then it was rigged. This is from the Financial Times. A new rise in U.S. Inflation is undermining Joe Biden's reelection message, threatening the president's effort to defend his economic record. Mentions the 3.5%. We went through this the other day. Byron York at the Washington Examiner, he said inflation never went away. So they can lie all they want. They can lie all they want, but it never went away. Things are just getting more and more expensive. I took you through it line by line just the other day. Listen to the chief propagandist at the White House explain it away. Clip one.
So when the president took office, and you know this, there was a pandemic. It was closing down businesses, closing down schools. And so it was drastically disrupting the supply chain. Let's not forget about that. And so that's what was going on. And that caused inflation around the world to increase. We know that. And then further increasing inflation was the Russia's war in Ukraine.
Okay, Russia and the pandemic. And that was during the last year of Trump. So Trump, Russia. There's a fresh new hot take. Trump, Russia. That's why we have some inflation. And since we've gotten in there 3.5 years ago, look at how much better it is. No. It's not getting any better. It's getting far worse. Those are the numbers. But they lie. It says here, for months, commentators and some of those outlets had praised President Joe Biden for bringing inflation under control. Some actually urged the president to be more aggressive in claiming credit for it. After Wednesday morning, there was less of that kind of talk. 3.5%. The onslaught continues, devaluing the dollar, adding another tax, printing $2 trillion more than we have every single year. America's under attack. This is from the Wall Street Journal. The real estate nightmare unfolding in downtown St. Louis. The Railway Exchange building was the heart of downtown St. Louis for a century. Further on, it says, today the building sits empty with many of its windows boarded up. A fire broke out last year, which authorities suspect was the work of copper thieves. Police and firefighters send occasional raids to search for missing people or to rouse squatters. This is at a city near you. I mean, it's St. Louis in particular, but it's happening all over the country. It says here, it anchors a neighborhood with deserted sidewalks, sprinkled with broken glass and tiny pieces of copper pipes left behind by scavengers. Signs suggest visitors should park in well-lit areas. Nearby, the city's largest office building, the 44-story AT&T Tower, now empty, recently sold for around $3.5 million, a 44-story tower. It's just completely empty. What is happening to America? These are bad signs for America as a nation, certainly for the economy. You look at the spirit of deceit, the dishonesty, the artificial intelligence that's on display as this is going on. And then people, authorities, telling you, you know what? Everything's actually pretty good, except the race thing. Now, we haven't had the race conversation yet. We haven't had an honest conversation. In that way, I mean, it's really bad. Everybody's racist in the United States. But oh, by the way, we want as many immigrants to come in as possible. We need them. And they love being here because they have jobs, you see. Or if you're Joe Scarborough, you can also kind of weave in abortion to the narrative. Just, you know, whatever. Say whatever.
tie it all together, even if it makes no sense, and just put it out there. Just say the key words, the hot button words. And hopefully people will just be deceived into thinking, yeah, I think we could use 4 more years of Joe Obama. I mentioned that story yesterday about artificial intelligence. I don't know if I read through it. I quoted my dad, actually, my father. It says here, this is from the Wall Street Journal, Japan's largest telecommunications company and the country's biggest newspaper called for speedy legislation to restrain generative artificial intelligence, saying democracy and social order could collapse if AI is left unchecked. Here is the government in Japan saying that this is out of control. There's nothing there to keep it in check. The social order is going to collapse because of this. Who is sounding the alarm on this in the United States or in Britain? How will this technology be used and manipulated in the years ahead? It says, unless AI is restrained, in the worst case scenario, democracy and social order could collapse, resulting in wars. That's according to this manifesto. I mean, we really and truly are. We're entering into a new era. This artificial intelligence technology, I mean, it hit the internet by storm just 18, 19 months ago, not that long ago. This is from the New York Times. Well, actually, let me just read this first. This was from Breitbart earlier today. Students submitted, the article is Cheating Detector. Students submitted 22 million papers written by AI last year. 22 million term papers or papers, assignments at high school, college. 22 million fake papers. It says here, Turnitin says its plagiarism detection tool found millions of papers that may include a significant amount of AI-generated content. Last year, the company launched an AI writing detection tool and trained it on a slew of papers written by high schoolers and college students and so on. It's just so easy to do. It's so easy to steal and to cheat. And think of the creators of this. You know, let's say if Google's running this or if it's the robot that's, you know, drawing information and to knowingly put it out there that if someone types in, yeah, I want a 3,000 word paper on the Panama Canal, and it comes out just like that. The creators of this making that available to liars and cheaters. I mean, society's just unraveling. That's what's happening. And you've got a few people that are sounding the alarm saying, look, this is going to lead to warfare. All this fakery, all this phoniness. People really and truly are living in another world. It's not based in reality. This from the New York Times, it says, using artificial intelligence, middle and high school students have fabricated explicit images of female classmates and shared the doctored pictures. This is a fun new game, right? Yeah, fabricate a nude picture of one of your classmates and then send it around and embarrass her, shame her. It's really sick. All school districts are grappling with the challenges and impact of artificial intelligence and other technology available to students at any time and anywhere. Did you hear this? All school districts are now grappling with this. Yet another. I mean, it always starts out good, doesn't it? Well, just like the iPhone, when it first came out 15, 20 years ago, you just kind of were mesmerized by it. And now you've got the UK considering a ban on smartphones for people under 16 years of age. Because they know people, we've had a generation of studies now showing how much harm it causes, showing the side effects. How much longer? I mean, we're only a year and a half into the AI craze, and I mean, it's taking the country by storm. How much longer before we wake up and say, you know what? This actually caused a lot of damage. This hurt a lot of people. The social order is unraveling. My father, this is from the March 2024 Trumpet, a very timely article. If you haven't subscribed, there's no cost, no obligation. Just call our operators today. The 800 number, it's 1-866-930-3024. You can see the title there, The Unknown Future of Artificial Intelligence. I did give you this one yesterday, but we'll read it again. It says, the greatest danger of AI is the spirit behind the men controlling it. The spirit behind it. There is a real spirit world. Read Ephesians 2 and verse 2. Read Revelation 12, 9, 2 Corinthians 4, 4. What about the spirit behind all this technology? What about the manipulation? We've seen how easily that they can construct a false narrative and how they can censor and how they... These are the people that created AI as well. These same people in Silicon Valley somewhere. All of them left-wing, all of them communist in their hearts. And we're just inviting it. Yeah, every school district, bring it on in. 22 million papers, fake papers. Manipulating artificial intelligence is a powerful way to manipulate the minds of the masses. It also opens new possibilities in advanced warfare. Whoever understands this technology has a significant advantage in this world. It seems certain that some will exploit the dark side of AI. He says, I believe we can know who these individuals are. It's going to be exploited, I should say, and lead to explosions. It's going to be exploited by the Holy Roman Empire, by the deep state, by... communist actors abroad as well. If you don't have that particular issue, as I say, that's March of 2024. Just go to our website if you'd like to get a free 1-year subscription to the Trumpet magazine. Just visit our website, thetrumpet.com. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show with our Bible study segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
T Two Chinese plots to infiltrate Canada's government surfaced last week during the Ottawa hearings on foreign interference in Canadian elections. Han Dong, a Chinese-born member of Canada's parliament, admitted on April 2nd that Chinese student voters from outside his electoral district were bussed in to ensure his 2019 election. A report said there was indication that a known Chinese consulate proxy agent led this effort by supplying the students with falsified documents to allow them to vote. The agent allegedly issued veiled threats regarding the students' visas and families to coerce them into submission. On April 3rd, Canadian intelligence officials unveiled a report showing they knew about China's plans to influence Canada's 2021 elections. The report revealed that Beijing identified anti-China candidates and attacked them through false narratives. The Trumpet's forerunner, The Plain Truth, warned that after losing the Cold War, communist nations would attempt to infiltrate Western nations from the inside. This warning was based on Bible prophecy. To learn more about this dangerous prophetic trend, read The Communist Infiltration of America Was Prophesied. Germany sent about 20 soldiers to Lithuania on April 8th to set up a permanent military base. This marks the nation's first long-term deployment since World War II. By 2027, Germany plans to send a total of 4,800 troops and 200 civilians to the region, forming a new brigade that will coordinate with NATO. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius said the deployment marks an important day for the German army. Article 5 of the NATO treaty states that an armed attack against one of its members will be considered an attack against all of them. Germany says this new base in Lithuania will help deter Russia from attacking another East European country like it did Ukraine. When World War II ended, Germany was forbidden to have a military. Now it not only has a military, but is also deploying troops outside of its borders. Permanently stationing troops in Lithuania marks a significant change in Germany's military policy. To learn more, read Why Germany's New Military Base Matters. Thousands of Israelis protested against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last week for mishandling the war in Gaza. Beginning on Saturday night, March 30th, protests were held in major cities across Israel, including Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Caesarea. In Jerusalem, protesters gathered in front of the Knesset and Netanyahu's home. The streets were mainly filled with concerned family members of Gazan hostages and people who want the election scheduled for 2026 to be moved forward or for Netanyahu to resign. Ultra-Orthodox men have also joined the protests because the Israeli Supreme Court ruled they are no longer exempt from military service. Since its birth in the 1940s, Israel has had a strong ally in the United States, until recently. Last year, the Biden administration was caught funding anti-Netanyahu protests, and Joe Biden recently called for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. Losing support from its biggest ally compromises Israel's security, and many Israelis blame Netanyahu for it. Bible prophecy indicates that because the U.S. has turned its back on its former ally, Israel will be forced to turn to another ally for help. To learn more about this important subject, read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry's article, As You Watch Gaza, Watch Germany. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There's your latest World Watch segment. I forgot to promote that at the start of the show, but hopefully it was a pleasant surprise for some of you. A lot packed into 3 minutes of reporting there. A lot of important stories. You see the communist infiltration of so many nations around the world. And they're especially good at rigging elections. This is the only way they can stay in power. they're doing it here in the United States. Hard to believe. And in Canada, you know, our brother to the north, there's just cheating, stealing, lying. It's all over the place, and there's a spirit behind it, as I was saying in the last segment. I've been emphasizing just the importance for us to put a top priority on our relationship with God. It's the most important relationship in the world. And we need God to protect us in this world that's just unhinged. It's off the rails. We need God for protection, and we need him too to help fight our battles. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, he wrote an article from, it's from back in 1980, goes by the title, "Let God Fight Your Battles." Let God do it. Let God take care of it. Trust him in faith. He says here, "The world you live in today is a very troubled world. You not only have your own personal problems, but you also suffer from the deliberate opposition and antagonism of the world around you. It's time that you considered how to conquer these troubles, how to be free from them, how to let God fight your battles instead." Notice 2 Chronicles 32. Mr. Armstrong refers to this passage in his article. We'll read as much of it as we can here, but verse 1 of 2 Chronicles 32, it says, "And after these things and the establishment thereof, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came and entered into Judah and encamped against the fenced cities and thought to win them for himself. And when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib was come and that he was purposed to fight against Jerusalem, he took counsel with his princes and his mighty men to stop the waters of the fountains which were without the city, and they did help him." So Hezekiah, he took action. He did his part. He reinforced the city walls. He redirected water channels. Verse 6 says, "And he set captains of war over the people and gathered them together to him in the street of the gate of the city. And he spoke comfortably with to them, saying, 'Be strong and courageous.'" Verse 7. "Be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him, for there be more with us than with him." How could this be? Verse 8, it says, "With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." It says, "And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah." They rested on these words, the fact that God fights for us. God fights our battles. We just have to trust him and follow him. As I was saying the other day, it's like that pillar cloud in the wilderness. I mean, it's always there. It's always out front. We just want to have the faith and the obedience to follow God's lead. Verse 10, it says, "Thus says Sennacherib, king of Assyria, whereon do you trust that you abide in the siege in Jerusalem? Does not Hezekiah persuade you to give over yourselves to die by famine and by thirst, saying, 'The Lord our God shall deliver us out of the hand of the king of Assyria'?" Verse 13, he continues with the taunting. It says, "Know you not that I and my fathers have done unto all the people of other lands? Were the gods of the nations of those lands any ways able to deliver their lands out of my hand? I'm all powerful. Nobody can stop me." Verse 16, it says, "And his servants spoke yet more against the eternal God and against his servant Hezekiah. He wrote also letters." So he's just trying to terrify the people of Judah, mocking them for their belief in God, mocking them for their trust in God. Verse 21 says, "And the Eternal sent an angel, which cut off all the mighty men of valor and the leaders and captains in the camp of the king of Assyria. So he returned with shame." This is the battle. God's describing the battle. "The king of Assyria returned with shame of face to his own land. And when he was come into the house of his God, they that came forth of his own bowels, his own offspring, slew him, therefore, with the sword. Thus the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, and from the hand of all other, and guided them on every side." God protected them on every side. He didn't take too kindly to those seemingly bold, audacious words of Sennacherib, mocking God, mocking the true God. In the article, Let God Fight Your Battles, it says, did you never realize that the very Creator who caused you to be born, who gives you the life you have, who called you into His truth, is able and anxious to fight all these battles for you, just as He did Hezekiah's? If you will only turn to Him and ask Him for wisdom and guidance, rely upon Him and trust Him with the result. We've got to commit our lives into His care. That's exactly where God wants them to be, so that He can fight for us. When Israel was obeying God and God's voice, God's king or God's prophet, God fought for them. You think about just the spirit, or at least the themes of these spring holy days that we observe. God delivering ancient Israel. God delivering them right out of captivity. God taking care of the Egyptian army in the Red Sea. This is from 2 Chronicles 14. This is respecting King Asa, another king in Judah, when the king of Ethiopia and his massive army was coming down hard on the people of Judah. 2 Chronicles 14 and verse 11, it says, "And Asa cried unto the Eternal his God, and said, Lord, it is nothing with you to help, whether that many or with them that have no power. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rest on you, and in your name we go against this multitude." I won't read the whole passage, but the scriptures relate that God smote this Ethiopian army. He put a million-man army to flight. He fought Judah's battle for them. He intervened to save them, to protect them, to lead them to victory. They couldn't do it on their own power. Ancient Israel couldn't come out of Egypt on its own power. They needed a lot of miracles, a lot of miraculous intervention. Exodus 14 and verse 13. This is Moses talking to the people, the Israelites. It says, "Fear not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will show you this day." This is what Moses said right before God parted the waters of the Red Sea. He said, "The Lord shall fight for you." God will fight for you. We see this over and again in Exodus, in 2 Chronicles. "Just let me lead the way," God says. "Let me take charge of this struggle, of this battle, and you'll be fine. You'll be okay." In Mr. Armstrong's article, he said, "If some of you brethren try to solve your problem or overcome your bad habits or resist sin in nothing more than your own power and strength," it says, "you too will find yourself outnumbered, overpowered, and doomed to defeat." We can't fight on our own strength. With men, it's impossible, Jesus said over in Matthew 19. But with God, all things are possible. Read what Paul said in Philippians 4. "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." We'll get into more on this next week, but that's all that we have time for on today's show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, we'd love to hear from you. TD@thetrumpet.com. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We thank some of you for joining us every day this week, and we'll see you next time.